That's right. There's now an intro here for Talkin' Moto. Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Moto. Today, obviously, we got the Denver recap. But before we get to that, we have some big news that came out just before the racing started on Saturday. Eli Tomac came out and said he's going to be racing the Pro Motocross Series and doing the SMX playoff rounds, which, I mean, I figured obviously he'd be doing the playoff rounds, but the Pro Motocross Series is kind of a surprise. Well, I don't know if I call it a surprise as much of as just kind of, honestly, I was just kind of waiting for him to announce that he was going to be doing it with being on a Supercross only deal. I had a good feeling he'd be doing the playoffs, especially after getting the win and getting the automatic qualifier to the playoffs, or the last chance qualifier, at least for the playoffs. But he also came out and said, as of now, he's got intentions on doing the 2025 season for Supercross. I'm assuming, once again, if he can stay healthy through the 2025 season, if he does choose to come back, I'm assuming he'll probably be doing outdoors and playoffs once again, which, obviously, more Eli Tomac in our lives is always a good thing for most of us, unless you're a 450 rider in the Super Motocross Championship, because then, well, you still got Eli Tomac out there you got to race against. But I'm excited to see him. I know I'll be at Redbud on the 4th of July race, so I'm excited to be able to see him at least one more time. Hopefully, fingers crossed, stays healthy and all that, and gets to race there. So, very exciting news. Eli Tomac is not done yet. Had a good feeling, like I've mentioned, had a good feeling this was going to be coming out. Just kind of a matter of time now at this point. So, I think that's really all. That's the only big news, I believe, that kind of came out during the week before the race started. Kind of scrolling through Twitter here. Benny Bloss will miss the remainder of the season. He fractured his arm and collarbone during practice, so that sucks for the new beta team, losing one of their riders again. They were down a rider coming into the season, with Benny Bloss being injured, and Colt Nichols, excuse me, being injured coming into the season, and now Benny Bloss came out and announced he's going to miss the last two races of the Supercross season. And so, also while I'm kind of scrolling through here, they got the St. Jude Love Moto Stop Cancer auction going on. I think it ends on the 13th, which would be next Monday. And I just saw that Eli will be matching up to 10K donation for his jersey. And I was looking at the auction site right now, just before I started recording this, and I think his jersey was up to like $7,000, I believe. So that's awesome that Eli Tomac's coming out and we'll be doing that. Yeah, it's at $7,000 as of now. So Eli Tomac, good guy, good racer. So I think it's time to jump into some of the action here that we saw on Saturday. So starting it off with the 250 qualifying, we had the West come back into action here, with RJ Hampshire had the points lead coming into the night over Levi Kitchen, and no surprise, them two went 1-2 in qualifying, with RJ being number one with a 54.546, and then Levi close behind with a 54.643. So those two, RJ knew he was going to have the speed, because there's been a couple races that we've seen Levi have the pure raw speed that RJ just couldn't hang with him. Mainly, I think of Seattle, where Levi had the pure raw speed over everybody in his heat race and in the main event. So RJ obviously has the speed here in qualifying. And then Joe Shimoda, got to mention him with the good day that he ended up having here after qualifying. Qualified 6th with a 55.9. So just under a second and a half off the pace of RJ Hampshire. And then a rider who's been having some pretty good hole shots, at least, is Ryder D. Qualified 9th with a 57.3. Ryder D, he had some troubles in his main event. I do believe, right? Or no, was it the heat race? Heat race. Ryder D had some troubles in his heat race. But obviously we'll get to that there in a little bit. So now, jumping into 450 qualifying, and Chase Sexton was looking really fast in qualifying, ended qualifying session 2, where he was on top of the board for a good little bit, and then Jet Lawrence jumped up there to that very familiar spot of being on top with a 53.866. And then Malcolm Stewart, who, I mean, typically he's always been pretty darn good in qualifying. He's always had some pretty good speed. I think the whoops might have helped him a little bit, being they just seemed a little bigger than they have been all season long. And we all know James Stewart fast in the whoops, and I think little brother Malcolm here has kind of picked up on that speed a little bit in the whoop section too. So Malcolm qualifies 2nd with a 54.104, and then we had the before mentioned Chase Sexton in 3rd with a 54.1. Stick with me here. 111. So, and then Cooper Webb here, Jets. Yeah, I mean, you would say title rival, but I feel like it's been slipping out of his hand with, another thing, just remembered, Cooper Webb, torn UCL in his thumb, ligament in his thumb there on his left hand. So, he said that happened back in Birmingham. I think he said in a heat race crash, I do believe. Go back and check my notes here. That was a long time ago as well. Did Webb? Yeah, I got my notes here for Birmingham. Webb goes down hard, pass triple into corner, and goes down. So yeah, that that goes down hard in my notes is was not very good for Cooper Webb. And then I guess he's tore it even worse the last couple weeks. So might explain some of the last two weeks at least being off the podium and just looking like he's struggling a little bit. And then our guy, Adam Ciancerullo, got two races left going into Denver, qualifies 11th with a 55.670. So, who knows? Maybe Ciancerullo can pull a rabbit out of his hat going into a snowy, as of now, Salt Lake City. But I'm going to be honest, I don't see him pulling no rabbits out of his hat. That's for sure. So, there we go. Okay. Just getting my ducks in a row here. But, so yeah, Jet Lawrence, very familiar, top spot in qualifying for the 450s. So now we will, we'll jump into 250 heat race number one, where old Joe Shimoda, I talked about him a little bit in qualifying, saying he had a pretty good night after qualifying sixth, pulls the whole shot, and Levi Kitchen, who obviously looking for good starts, I feel like he's been a pretty solid starter during his career. So obviously, crunch time here in championship, heat race, and main events, need some good starts here. He had a pretty mid pack start with Joe Shimoda pulling the whole shot, and then Jordan Smith was up there with Joe, and then Jordan Smith just kind of tucked the front end a little bit, and it seemed like it took him. It didn't seem like a very hard hit, but maybe not really tucked the front end. Back end kind of looks like it slides out, maybe lands going into a 90 degree left hand corner. Looks like the back end kind of maybe slid out a little bit, and then it seemed like he watching it live, seemed like he had some troubles getting up and getting back going again, but now seeing the replay, he was able to get going a little bit faster than I thought he would, but obviously losing a couple positions for that, and Levi Kitchen having to hunt through after the mid-pack start, obviously had to come through on a track where a lot of people said it was hard to pass. Obviously, we know Denver is very hard packed. I feel like up there in the elevation, everything seems to be harder packed up there. Like Salt Lake will probably be a little bit harder packed. And then, where were they? Philly, I guess that was a little harder packed too as well. But Levi Kitchen pulls out a big triple-triple, able to pass Talon Hawkins, get into second, where he was back 8.6 seconds behind Joe Shimoda in the end. So Shimoda, like it seems like he does every series he's in, starts off slow, and then towards the end of the year, finds something, turns it up, and starts racing a whole lot better. I think his main event finishes went 4-3-3-2-2. So he last couple races, I should say, with them having a little break there. Last couple races, he's been on a trajectory upwards. So that's good to see from the what seems like always happy Joe Shimoda. And now getting into heat race number two, where we had RJ Hampshire, just like Levi Kitchen, Ryder D pulls the whole shot, and RJ Hampshire about a middle of the pack start. So obviously the two championship guys looking to figure out their starts after two mid-pack starts for both of them in their heat races. Then Nate Thrasher was all over Ryder D. He was able to go inside on Ryder D, and then one lap later in the exact same spot. Hampshire, same spot, same move, everything. Ryder D goes outside, RJ Hampshire inside, and then another lap later, guys, you're never going to guess what happened. Ryder D went outside, Juju, Julian Bomer, goes inside, passes Ryder D, and three getting passed in the same spot, same way, not trying to change up lines, block the inside, kind of protect yourself and whatnot. He didn't do any of that. He went outside. I can't remember if it was three laps in a row, but it was definitely three out of four laps where the exact same happened. So it just shows that, obviously, still young, trying to figure it out, doesn't quite have the, like, racecraft, awareness and whatnot figured out completely. So you got to think, I mean, hopefully for his case, he starts to figure it out and is able to catch on. Hey, got past here once. Very next time, you got to hope maybe catches on, goes inside. Because I feel like getting past in the same corner two laps in a row, but if he goes inside the second time and the guy rails around the outside, which is a smaller berm, 90-degree corner, not exactly sure if it'd be possible to rail the outside of that corner, but I feel like even if you just change up your lines, show that you understand what might be happening and you're not going to let yourself get past the same way two, three laps in a row, I feel like that's just a little bit better than trying to stick to it and, like I mentioned, get past the same spot, same way, three out of four, whatever it was. I know it was at least three out of four. Can't remember if it was exactly three laps in a row. But Nate Thrasher ends up winning the Heat 2, and RJ Hampshire and Levi Kitchens' Heat races were very identical because RJ Hampshire's hunt ended in second place, just like Levi Kitchens did. So now, switching it up here, going to the 450s. Actually, I feel like if anyone's out there listening to this, I mean, obviously I'm doing this because I hope you guys are. Someone is, at least, I hope. But if I get some feedback on Twitter or X or whatnot, would it be better if I just do all 250s at once, just qualifying, heat races, main events, and then switch gears to 450s, or should I keep going like I've been doing this whole time with, like, following this schedule of how they actually ran? So if anyone's got good ideas, this episode I'll keep doing it the way I've been doing it, and jump into the 450 heat races now. But I don't know, maybe we can make a switch for next episode, or even the pro motocross recaps. So, because that'd be a lot more jumping back and forth there with the Moto 1s and then Moto 2s and whatnot. So, if you got a preference, let me know. Talking Moto on X, obviously. Talking _ Moto on X. And maybe I'll switch it up and see what you guys think. So, now getting into the 450 heat races, like I said, we had Hunter Lawrence, who's been getting really good starts the last, 3 weeks, where putting himself in good positions, not only in main events, but he's been doing it in heat races too. Obviously, it was, I do believe it was last week, where he got his first heat, or no, must have been 2 weeks ago, Nashville maybe, did he get his first heat win? Yeah, Nashville, he got his first heat win, but he's been having good starts a lot lately, and does the exact same thing here in Denver, 450 heat one, got a good jump, just straight out of the gate, good jump, and grabbed the whole shot, and Dylan Ferrandis goes down in the very first corner, and Cooper Webb also had a good start, and ended up being, I don't know why I'm saying and so much, I gotta figure that one out, but I know I almost just switched it to but see, dadgummit, there it is. Anyway, I had to think about how I was gonna do that one there. So Cooper Webb all over Hunt. That's all I'm gonna be thinking about now. This might turn into a 3-hour podcast. I hope not, though, because it'd be a lot of talking, and I don't think that would be a lot of listening from you guys. Even though I just had that couple-minute spiel there about hopefully someone's listening to me and giving me suggestions. But, oh well, here we go. Cooper Webb, all over Hunter Lawrence. So I'm thinking maybe his thumb early in the night wasn't bugging him as much, and all over Hunter goes the inside, goes up on the inside of Hunter Lawrence after going on off a table. Hunter seemed like he came up a little bit short going into the corner, which was actually the exact same corner that Ryder D was getting passed in, like I mentioned. So Hunter comes up short a little bit going into the corner. Webb goes inside, and then Hunter, it was weird. It didn't look like he really got the drive to double out of the corner, but Cooper Webb went for single and then would double onto the table. Puts him in front of Hunter Lawrence there. So, where are we? Yeah, and then my notes made me chuckle a little bit. I can be a pretty immature human, I guess you could say, because I said Hunter was on Webb's ass, to put it simple, and first curse word in the pod, check that box, I guess. But Hunter was all over Cooper Webb and tried to go inside on Cooper Webb. Cooper Webb, savvy veteran, you can call him, if you don't want to call him the older guy. Savvy veteran move. Kind of cuts down behind Hunter, and able to keep the momentum and drive, and in the end stay in front of Hunter Lawrence. And then Hunter Lawrence decided to do something that I do in video games a lot, because it's not my actual body on the dirt bike. He decided to blitz the rhythm section like it's just a giant whoop section, and surprise, surprise, it's not as fast in real life as I can do it on video games. Never would have expected that. I figured, hey, video games, you hold that sucker wide open and just go for it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, real life, doesn't work. But Hunter Lawrence still sticking with Cooper Webb, who ended up winning this. Cooper Webb obviously ended up winning this with Hunter Lawrence just over a second behind. And then your second fastest qualifier, Malcolm Stewart, finished third, just under 2.5 seconds back. And then a little bit more of a distant fourth, which didn't see very much during the broadcast, because especially now looking at the timing and scoring as the race ended, Eli Tomac was all by himself. He was 9 seconds behind Cooper Webb, and then in fifth was Shane McElrath, who was 16.5. So Eli Tomac had almost the same gap between him and Cooper Webb, the leader, and the fifth place guy. So Eli obviously out there just kind of riding by himself in Denver a little bit, which you got to think maybe what happened last year was in his mind a little bit. Also, forgot to mention this in qualifying, Eli Tomac had a one really close call and then one little tip over in the corner, but the close call comes up short, cases a jump big time, and I guess he hurt his, I think it was his wrist, so I guess he had that all taped up for heat races and main events, so it could have either been that holding him back a little bit, or kind of like what I thought was happening to Cooper Webb in Nashville, with that obviously being where his season ended last year. Maybe that was in Eli Tomac's mind here in his home race of Denver, obviously where his season ended last year. So just kind of some cards stacked against Eli maybe a little bit last year, being a freak accident, but in qualifying kind of a little bit more of something that was in his control. And then I did mention Dylan Ferrandis going down in the first corner. He obviously gets up, first corner, dead last, only able to get to 11th. So he did have to go to the LCQ, which, real quick, I'll touch on that, because he was really the only, I guess you can call it, heavy hitter in the LCQ. I know, Pulp, MX, Steve Mathis, they're Kyle Chisholm fans. He's in the LCQ almost every week. Didn't make it through this week. But back to Dylan Ferrandis here. Dylan, not the best start in the LCQ, but was able to let the race come to him. Ended up winning the LCQ and transferring into the main event. So now we can move on to heat number two for the 450s, where, never going to believe this, Jet Lawrence pulls the whole shot. Yep. Jet Lawrence did Jet Lawrence things in this heat race. Pulls the whole shot with Sexton. Also, obviously, he was really fast all night long, all day long. So, right behind him, and I got my notes, Jet, he absolutely decided to just say, "Hey, mate, I'm checking out." That's an Aussie accent. If you've never been to Australia, congrats, you're cultured now. I've never been to Australia, obviously, as you heard by my Aussie accent. My best Aussie accent is just Hunta, because I hear it every week when Jet Lawrence talks about Hunta when he's on the podium. Hunta and little brother Jetson. Anyway, let's get back on track here. Fun fact, 250 heat race number, or not 250, excuse me, 450 heat race number two kind of boring. I'm just going to say it. Not the most exciting. We didn't have someone getting passed in the same spot three laps in a row. We didn't have someone blitzing a rhythm section. We just had Jet Lawrence grabbing the whole shot, checking out. One thing I have in my notes is Jet Lawrence was up 5 seconds with 3.5 minutes left. Chase Sexton was able to cut that down by the end of the race to 3.3 seconds. So Chase also had the fastest lap of the race. Yeah, Chase had the fastest lap of the race with a 54.556. And then Jet with a 54.926, who was actually third. Look at that, old Jason Anderson with a 54.752 in the heat race. So, our guy Adam Cianciarulo was a really close seventh place, finishing 30 seconds behind, but still really close. 30 seconds can be a long time. 30 seconds can be a short time. Adam Cianciarulo finishing in 7th place in this heat race. And then, this just caught my eye. I was just talking about him too. Kyle Chisholm. His fastest lap of the race was 59 seconds on the dot. That's interesting. Kyle Chisholm also finished 12th place, which is kind of around what you would expect for someone to have a 59-second fastest lap. Unless you're Vince Friese. He had a 59.1 fastest lap, and he finished 8th. That's because everyone's scared of him. But, yeah, Jet wins easily, very comfortably, obviously very confidently, trying to just really put a stranglehold on this championship when he was leaving Denver. That was the goal, because it's obvious Jet would like to win championships. And well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, he is one step closer to it. And now we got, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's main event time. I should get Bruce Buffer, I think that's his name, from UFC to yell every time we go to a main event. But anyway, Joe Shimoda, keeping up with the theme of being very good towards the end of the season, gets a pretty solid jump, but he's on the inside of most riders, able to kind of control the corner, grabs the whole shot with Levi Kitchen in 4th, and then RJ Hampshire in 5th, coming out of the first corner, and then what just happened? Yeah. So, obviously, when I made my pick last week, I picked Levi to win, RJ to get second, so he had a 1 point in separation. My brain wasn't working. I wasn't thinking, hey, there can be a tie in the points, because I wanted a winner-take-all situation. And so I'm happy my pick didn't come true, because no spoilers, but ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we got a winner-take-all in Salt Lake City. Obviously, we're putting the cart before the horse here a little bit for this part of the podcast, because we still got a main event here to talk about. We got Joe Shimoda going out looking confident in his heat race after he pulled the whole shot. What do you know? He pulls another whole shot here in the main event, and gets to ride with more confidence. So, like I said, we had Levi Kitchen 4th, RJ Hampshire 5th coming out of the first corner. They were able to move up to 3rd and 4th pretty quickly after that. And then Levi was able to go inside on Jordan Smith. And then RJ Hampshire, we know how aggressive he can be. Obviously, guys are going to be thinking about that. I just had a little shout-out to Vince Friese. The last heat race, obviously, RJ seems a little bit more controlled chaos, where Vince Friese is just chaos. And so RJ goes up, tries to go up the inside, kind of pull the clutch, rip that sucker open, make a bunch of noise, trying to scare Jordan Smith, and it ended up working for him. Causes a mistake for Jordan Smith, able to get into third place right behind Levi Kitchen, who obviously he knows, both riders know the situation, all the viewers knew the situation with the 2 points separating them going into this race. So, oh, another thing I forgot to mention that happened off the start. Levi Kitchen, he has Fox boots with, I think it's 3 buckles, like, kind of up the shin calf area, and then 1 buckle around like the bottom of his foot, or like the middle of his foot, I should say, not the bottom. And I guess in the first corner, the top two, well, I know they came off, but he was saying in the first corner, is where it happened, the top 2 buckles on his boot actually came off. And it doesn't look like Fox has any Velcro up there, up top, because I know Alpine Star boots, which is what I have Velcro up top. So if a buckle blows off or whatnot, you wouldn't really be able to notice it, which, fun fact, a little bit calmer of a situation for me. But I was riding my bike last year before we went out for the first ride, riding it around the neighborhood. I got a old 2015 RMZ 250, so obviously good old Suzuki, got a kickstart. That the kickstart actually fell off, unbuckled the top buckle on my boot, and I didn't even know that it fell off, didn't feel it or nothing. All of a sudden, I was doing another lap around the neighborhood, saw the Kickstarter laying there, looked down, noticed no Kickstarter on my bike, and my top buckle popped off. And I'm assuming didn't feel it, one, because I was just cruising around, and two, because that Velcro still held it nice and tight for me. And see, there I go again. I just noticed it. The and thing. But Levi then in the press conference came out and said that he noticed it. He was blitzing the whoops in the beginning, but he felt like his foot was about to come out of the boot, actually. So that's why he switched to jumping them, which it was kind of a toss-up, I think, on which one was faster, because throughout the, if you jumped them, it would it'd set you up better to go inside real quick. But if, am I looking at the right spot? Yeah, okay. If you jumped them, it set you up better to go to the inside. Then if you blitzed them, I think it was a little bit faster, but then you had a little, you'd have to go outside a little bit more, because a little bit harder to slow down while blitzing him, obviously. So, yeah, that happened. But while all this is happening, Joe Shimoda is just looking real comfortable, clicking off laps with the two title rivals, second and third behind him. Joe Shimoda, there was a point where he did have a pretty solid lead, I do believe, at one point. And then Levi obviously had to get going, try and get away from RJ, and they got all the way to under. Levi was 0.6 seconds behind Joe Shimoda when they crossed the finish line for the final time. So Shimoda able to lead wire to wire with Levi Kitchen right behind him, and then just over a second and a half behind Levi Kitchen was RJ Hampshire in third, and then 18 seconds behind RJ was Nate Thrasher in fourth place. So those top three guys really comfortable. Even Levi Kitchen with a busted open boot. But obviously now we'll take a little peek-see here at the points where we have Levi Kitchen 186, RJ Hampshire 186, and then it's a winner take all between those two. And if something crazy happens, then Jordan Smith and Joe Shimoda are still mathematically in it, but they're going to need, especially Joe Shimoda is going to need, Jordan Smith's 21 back, Joe Shimoda's 23 back. So if the 250 West champion is not named Levi or RJ, then something crazy or catastrophic, which obviously we're not hoping, has to happen with the gap being so big to third and fourth. So this is about as good as it gets here, especially going into a east-west showdown. We saw last time Levi went into an east-west showdown with the red plate, saw what happened to him, and that's when RJ was really able to capitalize and take back over the points lead. So it's gonna be tense. They both know that you're gonna have to send it. And Levi came out, Levi was asked in the press conference if he thinks his teammate Seth Hammaker might be helping him out with trying to put a body between Levi and RJ. And Levi came out and actually said that I think he's gonna be a little more focused on that 33 Triumph bike, talking about Jalik Swole with what happened in the sand 2 weeks ago in Philly. So, and then there's nothing, no teammates out there for RJ Hampshire. He's out there ripping it all by himself. So it's going to be exciting. I cannot wait for this next race, to be honest. We're going to have three champions being crowned. Once again, I'm putting the cart before the horse here. We do need to end up getting back to the 450 main event here shortly, but yeah, we got Levi, RJ, tied points lead. Second, is this? I can't remember if there was a tied points in the 250 East, but if there was ever tied points in the 250 East, then we would have had, at one point in this season, a tied two red plates out there for every class. But yeah, there was, wasn't there? Because wasn't the last East-West shootout? Why do I feel like McAdoo and Vial were tied in points? Also, why is my, oh boy, that's gonna be difficult to understand. Yeah, I can't tell as of now. We can go take a look at the notes here. Where are we? Was that Seattle? Was that, no. What was the East West? Is it Foxborough? This is really bad podcasting. St. Louis, possibly? Nope, that was a Triple Crown. What the heck? But yeah, I feel like there definitely was a tied points race in the 250 East. There had to have been, right? Yeah, this is really bad. Really bad podcasting here. Because I'm looking through all my notes here, and I can't find anything. I can't find where I had the East-West shootout. Nashville. Yeah, it was Nashville. There we go. So now I gotta go to Foxborough. Anyway, I'm just gonna ignore. We can all just ignore that absolutely terrible 5 minutes of a sorry excuse of a podcast, which that's what that last 5 minutes just was. Anyway, so there we go again. Anyway. Jumping in now to the 450 main event. We had, good job. I closed my notes. My mind is in an absolute pretzel right now. Okay. Here we go. 450 main event time now. Where Hunta. There we are. He's back again. Hunta. With the good starts, pulls the whole shot. He had Jet right behind him, and then Sexton goes down in turn one, where Eli had another pretty good start, starting in third, right behind the two Lawrence brothers. Looking at what happened to Chase here, I hate to say it, but that front end seemed like it got a little, front end looked like it got a little tucky, if you know what I mean. Malcolm Stewart was also hung up in that little mistake there by Chase Sexton in the first corner. But Eli Tomac then slides out, goes from third all the way to eighth place, which left the two brothers up front, one and two, Hunta being one, Jet being two, pretty much all by themselves for a little bit. Hunter had, with 16 minutes left, which obviously a lot of racing. Hunter had a little gap of about 2 seconds. And Jet all over Hunter, obviously. Brothers, teammates, all this. Not going to do anything stupid or stupidly, like, on purpose, because I think it was the Paris Supercross, the little preseason race that most of the guys, that a bunch of the guys do. Jet had a little incident there where he couldn't get on the brakes fast enough after the whoops and goes in and hits Hunter. So I'm sure that might have been running through Jet's head a little bit here in this main event, where I didn't want to do that because Hunter never won a 450 main event, obviously. I guess it was in Jet's head if he had to push. He came out and said if Jet, holy smokes, that's tough section there. If Jet came out and said if he had to push pretty hard to try and get by Hunter, I just did it on accident too. If he had to push hard to get by him, then he was just going to let him have the win. But we all saw Jason Anderson come charging. Jet had to make a move. Ends up getting by Hunter. Hey, I said his name right that time. Good job. Jet goes inside trying to get away from Hunter. Or not Hunter. Jason Anderson. But while this is happening, Chase Sexton goes down the first turn. We saw how fast he was in qualifying. Saw how fast he was in his heat race. Chase was absolutely charging. I don't have in my notes here the highest position. I think he got all the way up to sixth, I believe it was. Right behind Cooper. No, fifth, because he got by Cooper Webb shortly. He was going everywhere he possibly could go on that track to try and make some moves, and then gets by Cooper Webb, pushes the front end, kind of similar on what happened to the first turn, and then I think it might have been Justin Cooper maybe. Or possibly even Cooper Webb. Someone, anyway, ran over Chase Sexton's feet. Obviously nothing they can do. Wrong place, wrong time. Chase Sexton's on the ground. Shouldn't be there. Might have been charging a little too hard on the hard and slick track that was Denver. But like I mentioned, Jet Lawrence ends up getting the win, tying his fellow countryman in Chad Reed for his eighth main event win in his rookie season. That is now second place. I think the record was Jeremy McGrath, I believe, with 10 wins, and Jet basically wraps up the championship with Cooper Webb coming in fifth here. Tough spot for Webb now being 20 points back. So it's all but wrapped up now for Jet Lawrence, that's for sure. And then here we are. So, little championship look ahead here for Jet Lawrence. Up 20 points. Worst case scenario, Jet needs to be 16th, finish 16th, and he wins the championship no matter what. That's Cooper Webb wins, Jet gets 16th or better. Championship is Jet Lawrence's in his rookie season, just like he did in motocross, obviously going undefeated, and what he did in the playoffs, winning the SMX, what was it, a world championship or whatever they called it. So now that we're kind of on these clinching scenario here, we can take a look at the 250 East, which obviously coming back into play for Tom Vielle being up 15 points over Hayden Deegan. That's the only possible, the other possible guy who can win this championship, the only one not mathematically eliminated. Hayden Deegan wins. Tom Vielle, worst case scenario, gets 11th or better in the championship, is his in his second season. Now, I'm not trying to toot my own horn or whatever, but I do believe I have mentioned in the past, maybe before the first 250 East race, I did say I think Tom Vielle is going to be better in year two, working with Marvin Musquin. I didn't predict him to win the championship. Didn't think he was going to be that much better, but I did say Tom Vielle will be better. I also did pick Hayden Deegan to win the championship. I mean, there's a basically guaranteed chance I go over three on my championship picks, because I had Chase Sexton, who is 54 points back. I had Joe Shimoda, who is 23 points back. And I had Hayden Deegan, who's 15 points back, which he might have to take a run at Vielle in the heat race to worsen his gate pick, maybe. And then maybe even take a run at him in the main event. But obviously we'll see how that goes. So let's take a little look-see here at the track map for Salt Lake City. First thing that stands out, I tweeted this, posted this, X'd it, or whatever you want to call it. There is an over-under jump directly behind the start gate. I think Adam Cianciarulo has a chance to do the funniest thing ever, with obviously him being fined for a little urination relief before in a tunnel jump, I do believe he was. So there's a chance he can do the funniest thing ever and do it again in his last race ever. Well, last professional race ever. As of now, he says. I believe him. That's besides the point. But back to the track here. What looks like it's going to be a pretty decently long start straight into a long left-hand corner. There's one rhythm section. It's a pretty long rhythm section. Goes almost the entire floor of the stadium. And there's going to be quite a few options. I think fastest might be roll, onto a table, off, triple, and then onto like a little, another table shelf jump type platform, I guess. And then off, and then single into the corner. I think that's going to be your best bet. You see long whoop section here in the track map. Obviously, it's going to be 9 whoops. Hopefully, they're a little bit bigger so they can be skimmers, because I think watching the riders and racers and whatnot skim the whoops, I think that is a whole lot better than watching them jump the whoops. Maybe just a little bit more entertainment in my mind, but yeah, go across the start straight. What is that? 1, 2, 3 times, and then like go back up it halfway back into that long rhythm section. So there's another little section here with, I think you can go roll on to a table, off into the corner, maybe even outside. Would triple on, maybe put you too much speed going into that tight left hand corner. I don't know, it's possible. It's going to be interesting to see how that works. Also, there's a chance, because of the snow that they got today, there's a chance it's just a muddy, sloppy mess. But looking at the weather now, it says cloudy for Thursday, partly cloudy Friday, sunny Saturday. So, no more rain. It's no precipitation expected in the next 10 days in Salt Lake City. So, hopefully that stays out of there. But I think the track hopefully shapes up good for Jet Lawrence to go out there and put the stamp on the, I don't know if you heard that, but that's the stamp. Put the stamp on this championship. I think he's going to go out there and win. Break the tie with him and Chad Reed. Move into second, all alone in the rookie win list in the premier class. And then I do think Sexton's going to beat Tomac. So I think Sexton will end in third place in the points. So, jumping down here, 250 time. See, this is the hard part, because we got a winner-take-all situation in the West. And then we have a Tom Vial situation in the East, which I think Tom Vial is going to play it safe. Obviously, the championship experience he has in the MX2 class. I don't think Tom Vial is going to win it unless he goes out there, pulls the whole shot, and just rides his race, for lack of a better word or terms or whatnot. So I think the winner's coming out of the West. And I don't think he's a Rockstar Husqvarna guy. I think he's a Pro Circuit Monster Energy Kawasaki's Levi Kitchen. So I think Levi Kitchen is going to end up winning the race, stay out of trouble, unlike the first East-West shootout. I think Levi, stay out of the trouble, win the race, win the championship. So then our champions will be Jet Lawrence, 450, Levi Kitchen, 250 West. And I think Tom Vial plays it safe and smart and ends up winning the East. So let me know what you think, who you think is going to win the 250 West Championship. Real interested to see who's winning that sucker. So I think that'll just about wrap us up here for another episode of Talking Moto. Don't forget, always Talking_Moto on X. Give a follow, share, listen, please. Give me that suggestion I was talking about earlier with, should I just do all 250 stuff and then switch over to do all 450 stuff, or keep following what I've been doing, which is just follow the, talk about them how they happened on actual race day. So real interested to see what you guys would think about if we switched it up a little bit. Also, we got an intro and an outro now too, which Also, my bike I was telling you about, that's my bike. And the other bike in the intro and outro is my dad's bike, 2000 XR400, an old Honda. So, that was fun. Started up the bikes last week, took the computer and microphone out there, got a little recording of it. So, hopefully you guys enjoyed not just the my voice entering the pod, but you get a little bit of a little dirt bikes revving, feeling good in your system, let you know what we're talking about here. So, that's enough rambling for me. Hope you enjoyed this first Supercross season. Not over yet, obviously. Lots of racing left. So, I'll be back next week to recap Salt Lake City, obviously. Talk about the champions. And then, I'll have to take a look on when a motocross preview will be coming out. But obviously we got one more race of Supercross. So, got that Saturday. Very excited. And, yeah, I'm done rambling. So, I'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.